course, we know that in the last parasha, in this parasha, we're mentioning a lot of mitzvot that has to do with our mouth. Last week, when we learned about Shmini, it was about kosher food, what comes into the mouth. Then in Parashat Tazria, what's going out of my mouth, we learned that on Sunday. But we know that the main cause of tzarat, which is called leprosy, is the cause of Lashon Hara, of talking bad about another person. And needless to say, that we all fail in this sin, and this is one of the most severe sins, is Lashon Hara, slandering. Sunday we talked about gossiping, and gossiping is a whole different thing. Gossiping is gossiping, and Lashon Hara is Lashon Hara. Because gossiping is me talking about somebody else's business, and it's a mundane thing, and it doesn't necessarily affect that person. And I can talk about nonsense, and as long as it doesn't affect badly the other person that I'm talking about, this is not Lashon Hara, this is just gossiping. And the severity of it is not as bad as Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is when I speak Ra, bad about somebody, and it caused him damage. And this is a severe thing, to be talking bad about somebody, and that person will be harmed because of what I say. And this is considered one of the worst things, sins one can do, mainly because it's almost impossible to fix it. Go fix now the Lashon Hara. How can you fix now damage that you already did? Now, there's a very big question. When is Lashon Hara? I get emergency phone calls or text messages. Is this Lashon Hara? Can I say that? Or some people in a conversation, they would say, I don't know if this is Lashon Hara or not. This is Lashon Hara. Can you give me permission to say this juicy stuff right now? I want to know if it's Lashon Hara or if it's not Lashon Hara. So we want to know the definition. Now, regardless, this is not exactly what I want to talk about, but I want to talk about the topic of what is exactly the Lashon Hara and why we're not supposed to say that. And what there is a whole concept around it. Because Sunday, if you were here, and if you weren't, you can watch it online, we talked about the concept of gossiping, and we concluded it that the gossiping is not good because the words that I produce are negative. And since the words that I produce are negative, that's the reality that I create. And I create a negative reality. So why even go into that direction? But unfortunately, we are a creature that likes to stir things up. And when there's a good, juicy detail, it's very hard not to say anything. And I heard once a very interesting and funny joke that there was once a city, and every Friday, the heads of the religious groups would meet. And in the meeting was a rabbi, was a priest, and was a qadi, you know, the head of the Muslim community. And they would meet secretly, and they would discuss religious things, and they had, some type of an agreement that this is a meeting, and they all want to have a benefit for their own crowd and their own religion. So every Friday they would meet and talk about all sorts of matters. One time the priest said, listen, you know, we've been meeting for so many years, I feel so comfortable with you, and you know, I want to confess. I have something that it's out of control. And I don't know who to confess to, and I think you are the right people to let it out. I just needed to let it out. So of course the rabbi and the qadi was like, oh yeah, of course we want to hear. The priest has something to confess. That we want to hear. So he's like, listen, I want to confess, but I have a condition, because I don't want that what I'm about to tell you to be in tomorrow's newspaper. So in order to make sure that you are keeping what I have to say, how about each and every one of us confesses one thing that they would never dare to say, or that is very hard for them? So they all agreed, yes, we like the deal. So the priest says, I have a problem with money. I get donations, I take it to myself. And I can't control it. I have this urge. And I see money, I get all confused. And I have a problem, and I use it, and I like buying nice stuff. And Okay, fine. So the Kadi says, you know what? Now that we're pouring our hearts out, I have a problem with eating. I can't control my eating. And it's so bad that in the month of the Ramadan, the Muslims have 40 days that they fast from morning to night. And then they eat at night. This is called the Ramadan. So he says, I have such a urge, such a desire for food, that when it comes, the 40 days of the Ramadan, midday, I can't control myself. I hide, I close the doors and windows, I start eating some sausages, some stuff. I can't control myself. And I'm the leader of the congregation. I mean, everybody's looking up at me. Like, I can barely hold in my urge, and I have to eat by midday. Tough. Then they both turn their heads to the rabbi. Now let's hear what the rabbi has to confess. The rabbi says, I have even a bigger problem than that. And they're like, what? What? Tell us. He's like, I have a problem with keeping secrets. So that was the next news title for the next day. So we have problems with keeping secrets. And somebody will come and tell you, do you know what I just heard? What? I can't tell you. So why did you tell me? Do you know what I just heard? No, it's... I can't tell you, but... So we have a serious problem with keeping secrets. And when we see something or hear something, I can't wait. Who's going to be the first one that I'm going to... You do not believe what I just heard. The information that came to my possession. So this is our nature. And it's our nature because it's prohibited to do. So there's a teava, there's a lust to now go and be the one who breaks the news. And it's very hard for us to hold it as a human being. But we are we have to hold our tongue. Now, here comes a big question that I get a lot, and it's a very practical question. When is really the Lashon Hara? Now, the definition of Lashon Hara, Lashon is tongue, Ra is bad, is when I say something and it will hurt another person. It will hurt them. That is Lashon Hara. If I just told you, you know that Moishele just bought a house for 5 million shekels? Really? Oh, very nice. It's a big house? Yeah, it's nice. It's a... That's not Lashon Hara, that's gossiping. It doesn't hurt Moishele that he bought the house. It doesn't hurt, doesn't benefit, doesn't do anything. That's gossiping. But if I come and say now something that will hurt you, that is Lashon Hara. But what happens when I have to protect somebody? There's a lot of scenarios that I'm in a bind. Should I say what I know because it might be Lashon Hara, but I'm actually protecting somebody? What is the answer? So there's different scenarios, and I'll give you a few scenarios just so we can be practical because we want to be able to bring it into our life. Imagine you're sitting in your home and you take a glimpse out the window and you see some kids of the neighbors damaging the car of another neighbor, kicking it, jumping on it, throwing a ball, makes a dent in the door. Should you go now to the owner of the car and say, it's those kids? Because in one way, you're talking Lashon Hara about them. They did something bad, they'll get in trouble. But on the other hand, wait a minute, this poor guy, he got his car damaged now. So what do you do? Do you go and tell who damaged the car or not? You saw it with your own eyes, you're in a bind now. If you're telling that the kids did it, that's technically Lashon Hara. If you're not saying that, that person now is going to be in a financial loss. It's not fair. That's not nice. So you have a tough situation. Now, what happens in a different situation? A person that you know of is a very good friend of yours, and he has a very severe sickness. Very severe sickness. And you don't want to tell it to anybody. But if you're not going to tell it to somebody, then another person can chas v'shalom be affected by that. For example, let's say somebody calls you up and they want to match him, do a shidduch. And they tell you, do you know so-and-so? Yeah, of course, my best friend from third grade. Is he okay? Now, in one way, you don't want to say that that person is not okay. Now we'll be talking Lashon Hara about him. You know, now it's a very sensitive thing because, for example, people call me for a recommendation for another person for a shidduch. Now I know that person's problems. And sometimes I know whether the person has a certain problem, an anger problem, a depression problem, whatever, a certain sickness. And somebody calls and tells me, do you know anything about this person? Is it a good person? Should we match him up with so-and-so? Now, on one hand, if I say no, the person has a problem with anger, or the person is consuming psychotic pills and he's not so much in control, I'm talking Lashon Hara about that person. But here I'm in a bind. Should I can't say everything's fine with him, and what do I do? Now again, I just want to repeat a few scenarios, because we meet these scenarios on a daily basis. And not too long ago, I'll give you a different scenario. There's a certain individual that everybody thinks that he's very, very wealthy. Maybe some of you even know him. And he lost a lot of money, some bad business deals, and now, you know, the millions that he has now is his debts. So he still might have a very fancy car, and everybody knows him as being very rich, but he doesn't have anything. He's actually in a lot of debt. Now somebody else came and asked for a recommendation, should I do a business deal with this guy now? Is he trustworthy? Now, happens to be in this case that I know him. Now I know he's trustworthy, but I also know he doesn't have money. Now he's trying to get out of his bind by pulling out a business deal, but I know that person has no money now. And the person who's coming to do the deal thinks it's going to be a good partnership because that person is wealthy. And what do you do here? Lashon Hara. If I talk about and says, no, he lost a lot of money, he's this, he's that. So I'm in a bind. And you see another situation with that. For example, in a doctor that knows your medical record, and somebody calls him about the medical record. He's not allowed to say anything. But what if that person that's called needs to know what's your situation? Now, there are many other scenarios. One scenario somebody asked me also not too long ago, a person is a reporter. Now a reporter, 99% of them are liars and they have a certain agenda. But some of them really come to report what's going on. Now this is in general Lashon Hara. Now how do you become a reporter? And how do you report? Now if you're reporting the truth, you have a problem. If you're lying, then you're a liar. So we have many scenarios that you are in a situation that you have to say Lashon Hara, so to say, but maybe it's not Lashon Hara because maybe I'm helping somebody. What do I do? And this is something that happens to us a lot, all the time. Now, the last parasha, we were talking about how do I know when a person has tzaraat, the diagnostic. And it says how the Kohen, the priest, would come, and if there would be a stain on the wall, depending on the color of it, how long it would be there, they would take it out. And there was a whole process to diagnose if there is tzaraat to the house. First the tzaraat, the leprosy, would start in the house, then in the clothes, then in the body. But the parasha goes in depth to the diagnostics. How do you recognize that it is tzaraat? This parasha is actually talking about how do I fix it, the remedy. Now one of the things that the metzora, the person who had leprosy, had to do, once the Kohen said, you are metzora, that person had to run out of the city, and as he's running out, he had to scream, don't come near me, I have tzaraat, I have leprosy, stay away. Just imagine the embarrassment, but that's what he had to do. He would have to scream it, not to just walk like this quietly from a side door. He had to walk out and say, don't come near me, I have tzaraat, which would be extremely embarrassing. But in our parasha, it's talking about the dinim, the laws, how to bring back the purity. Now it has a very interesting description, if you notice. First of all, the metzora had to bring pure, kosher, live birds. Shtei tziporim chayot tehorot. So they had to be alive and they had to be pure. Then he had to take a piece from a pine tree, which a pine tree is a very big and large tree, and then he had to take a few leaves from a very low, like type of a grass. It's called ezov, and that's like grass, but very, very small. And the pine tree, Etz Erez, it's a very, very high tree. Then he had to bring like a wool, some type of a wool that was dyed with a certain ink that had to be red. And the process was is to take one bird, slaughter the bird, and of course the Kohen had to slaughter the bird, take the blood of the bird, pour it into a vessel, then the person had to take that the wool that is dyed and dip it in the blood with the rest of the stuff, the piece of the tree and the grass, put it all together in the cup. And this whole process has to be done by the Kohen, and that would bring the purity to the person who has leprosy. Now, this is not a regular scenario. This has seems something very mystical. Take two birds and take the blood and the wool and the this and the mixing and the... Seems something very deep in there. But that was the path how to get pure from leprosy. Now, usually, what would cause a person to say Lashon Hara? Usually what would cause a person to say Lashon Hara is Geava, having pride. That person hurt me, now I have to hurt him back. That's usually the case. Unless you're suffering from some type of mental disorder, this is the case why we say Lashon Hara. I'm not saying Chas V'Shalom to hurt anybody, I'm just saying that some people, they have some type of a distorted way of behaving, and constantly they have to slander people. But usually one will say Lashon Hara, that person hurt me, you went to a lab to fix your phone, he cheated you, and he robbed you out of your money, or whatever scenario, now you are upset, and you're going to go and tell the entire town, he cheated me out of my money, he didn't even fix my phone, he gave me a used screen, whatever it is. Why are you saying this Lashon Hara? You're angry, because that person hurt you. He did something to you. Excuse me?
Aren't you protecting other people?
Wait, that we're going to analyze at the end. The question is, yeah, now you're very pious and you're saying because you're warning other people. That's the going back to the question that I presented before, all the questions. But usually, let's pretend today that we're not so pious, we're not tzaddikim today. I will say Lashon Hara because somebody annoyed me. And I need to show him how I know how to handle situations. Oh, I'm going to show him now. That's usually where the Lashon Hara comes from. That somebody said something against me or did something that hurt my pride. Because if I would have the Midah of Anava, I would be like, okay, it's okay, nothing happened. I probably deserved it. It's probably a sign from Hashem for me to see something. But really, it originates, we're not going to dissect it now, because that's not what I want to talk about, but usually, Lashon Hara will originate from pride. And as we mentioned many times, when we talk about the midot of our character traits, the first midah that will be birthed after pride will be anger. Why do I get angry? Because my pride was stepped on. So right away, it would trigger anger. Now, if I'm angry, it's better just to slap the person on his face and move on. Get the anger out, give him a punch to the face, and move. And then don't keep the anger in. That's technically the right way to do it. Now, we're not going around and hitting people, but technically one should right away slap somebody. And this is not my invention, by the way. This is what it's talking about in the Talmud. The Talmud says, you're angry with somebody, give him a slap to his face, get the anger out, you square it out, move on. Because if you're not going to slap him across the face, the engine is going to start bubbling. So you'll be calm for 3 days, and then it's going to burst. And the way it's going to burst is going to, you know what that person did to me? You know what he said about you? You know what he did here? So sometimes it's better, and I'm not now recommending to go and slapping people in the face. Don't start hitting people and say, well, listen, Alon told me it's better to slap you in the face. And now I have an approval. I have a rabbinical approval to hit you, because if not, I'm going to say Lashon Hara about you. So don't. This is not a recommendation. Don't go and do that. But if you want to use it as advice, then don't hold your anger in. Don't have to give a physical slap, but it's always better to take care of it right away, that it doesn't stay inside. But technically, that Gemara, the Talmud says, better just slap a person in the face because you'll get it over with. Why? Because Lashon Hara is you're shooting an arrow out to the universe and you have no idea how far it's going to go. Now, we're going to, just for a quick question, sidetrack before what Aliza said, but you protecting somebody else. We're going to get to that in the end. When are you really protecting somebody and what is your obligation to protect somebody? But can you imagine, and I'm not answering you right now, I'm just telling you, can you imagine when somebody did something bad to you and you go out now and you say something bad about them? My kids, they have a certain video that they watch, Uncle Pucci, something like that. I don't remember the name. Maybe you know the name, but it's like puppets. It's a Jewish theme and it's made from puppets and it's very, very smart and good lessons for kids because it's done in a puppet show and they teach them all sorts of things. So, and I hear it sometimes playing in the background, and one of the series is, there's a boy that he goes into a bakery and he orders a certain cupcake or whatever it is, and then he has a stomach ache and he goes to the doctor and the doctor says that you have a stomach poisoning, and he says, oh, I bought my cupcake from whatever baker it is, Finkelstein, Edelstein, whatever it is, and it shows in the show how the word is going around that little Moishi got stomach poisoning from the cupcake he took from Edelstein's, or whatever, don't take me by the word, from the bakery. And it shows the scenario how within 2 days, this guy has no customers. And comes Friday, and he's standing outside. People have to come and buy challahs and pastries, and nobody's going in. And he doesn't understand. And it's done so smart that the kid will understand the damage of Lashon Hara. Then, of course, it concludes that the doctor calls with the observation, whatever it is, and it says the stomach problem was from something else, and the boy says, oh my gosh, I told everybody it's from the cupcake, and they show very nice how the damage could barely be repaired because already the word was out. And there is a story, it's a very famous story, that there was once a town and they were looking to hire a certain rabbi to do a certain job. And they came and asking around who's the reputable rabbi, and a certain name came up. Okay, and they started questioning and looking into the past of this rabbi. So he goes to one place and he says, have you ever heard about this rabbi? Yeah, of course, a big rabbi. Can you tell me anything about him? And they say, listen, you know, he's smart, he's sharp, he has a lot of good things, but you know that in his record, you know, he once stole 5 books of Torah, 5 Torah books. And they're like, what? 5 books? I'm not talking about a little book. I'm talking about the Sefer Torah. 5 books? Doesn't make sense. So they start looking into it. So they go to some people that were in that shul. So they start asking around and they say, listen, yeah, he stole, but it wasn't 5 books. It was 1 book. Okay, that's a big difference between 5 and 1, but still, that's 1 book. So they continue investigating and asking around, and then they get to somebody who's a very big part of that shul, and the guy says, no, I don't know where you heard that. He didn't steal a Sefer Torah. He took a book out of the shul. Just a book, not a Sefer Torah. He just took it out of the shul to his home. That's what he took. Suddenly from stealing a Sefer Torah, he went down to a book. So the guy who was investigating saying, listen, it started with 5 books of Torah, now we're down for just taking a little book out of the shul. He finally tracked the gabbai, And the Gabbai says, no. He didn't steal the book. He was just said a drasha. He said something on Shabbat about the Torah. And somebody later on found that he copied it from a certain book. So he took, he didn't invent this Dvar Torah, he took it from a book. So he didn't even steal it, he just took it from the, he read it. And he just didn't mention, I took it from that book. That's it. So starting from something so little, he didn't do anything. He just said a Dvar Torah on Shabbat. And he just didn't mention, by the way, the source for it is from that book. Down the line, somebody read it, but like, hey, he stole it from the book. He stole it. Bear in mind, he read it. He stole it from the book. And then it became, he stole the book. And then a Sefer Torah. And down the line, it reached to he stole 5 books of Torah. And that's the problem with Lashon Hara. That you come to say something very little, and before you know it, it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. So the reason why the Talmud says, give that person a smack and finish with it, because the damage you do with the smack, it's here and over. Lashon Hara, you shoot it, it will start going so far and will become more and more and more that at some point the damage will be so severe and it's not even connected even to the truth. So that's the problem with Lashon Hara. That you don't have control of the damage. And you can come, in the example I gave you, you came to fix something, you can tell me, you know what, don't go to that store anymore because he cheated me from the money and he gave me a wrong screen or whatever it is that he fixed. But what happens is now I'm going to start passing it around and I'm not going to say a small screen, I would say he robbed her. And then the next person, he did this. And before you know it, from a little thing that he did that you have to warn me, it got out of control and it ended up being a complete disaster. And that's the main problem with Lashon Hara. But we don't want to talk about Lashon Hara. We know how bad Lashon Hara is. The thing that I want to talk about is a little bit into the mystical part of the process of cleaning or making the person pure from the Lashon Hara. When you're talking about the process. Now, very interesting, there is a commentary on the Torah that is very famous. His name is Rashi. I'm sure you heard about him, and I'm sure you also learned Rashi. Rashi comes to explain what's called Pshuto Shel Mikra, the simple explanation. Very rarely Rashi will explain something mystical. Even though Rashi was known to be a very, very mystical individual, some even say he was a very big Mikubal, but Rashi keeps it simple. Rashi himself, in this parasha, comes and explains it. Now, he also says that the place what originates the Lashon Hara is Geava, is pride. Because in essence, if a person is very humble, he would not even start with Lashon Hara. He would just keep it quietly because he would understand, okay, I was supposed to experience what I had to experience. But really when you want to dissect the mystical part of what you do, the first thing that you take is you take what's called Etz Erez. Erez is a pine tree. And pine is a very, very high tree. That's coming to represent my ego, my Geava, that I feel myself so high up. Then I take what's called the Ezov. The Ezov is this very little grass, which is very little. It comes to basically tell me, get off your high horse, lower yourself from that tree that you climbed on and humble yourself to a very low level like the grass that has been stepped on, that is small and humble. Then it's telling me to take 2 pure birds and alive birds. Now if you want to find a type of an animal that speaks a lot, it's birds. Yesterday I was up, not yesterday, every day, but yesterday I noticed it. It was actually this morning, I go out, it was 4:30 in the morning, and you hear birds. It's not even light yet. All you hear is all day long. You hear them whistle. So, excuse me? I do it very well? Yeah, well, after hearing them so many times, I know how to do it. So, birds, if you want to find some type of an animal that talks a lot is birds. They constantly, they say in Hebrew, mitzafzefot. They chattering. Chip, 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 chip. And all day long. If you go next to a forest or somewhere that has a lot of trees or the woods, or you hear all the noises. So the birds represent the animal that speaks a lot. So we take two birds. They have to be alive. Why? Because they need to talk. But it has to be pure birds. Can't be an impure bird. Why? Because it comes and tells me, we know you have a problem with talking, but at least talk positive things. Stop talking negative things. Start talking positive things. There's nothing wrong with talking. I know that you have the nature of talking. But change it from the bad talking to the good talking. Start, instead of talking bad about that person and saying, he's a thief, she's a liar, she said this about me, he took this and didn't return. Don't say the bad things. Start talking about that person good things. He's courteous, he's polite, he's very nice, he's a good father. Start putting the good into it instead of the bad. And, you know, the Talmud says a story about a very famous sage. His name is Rabbi Akiva. And the story goes that he was a Am Haaretz. He was a very simple person that didn't even know how to read. And then he met his wife, Rachel, who she was the daughter of the richest person of the generation. She was the daughter of Bill Gates. And they say at the time there were three very rich people, and one of them was her father. And they used to call him Kalba Savoa. And she was known as Bat Kalba Savoa, the daughter of Kalba Savoa. And then she decides to marry Rabbi Akiva, who was poor, and he had nothing. And her father threw her out of the house. He's like, I'm disowning you. She didn't care. She saw the potential. She saw exactly who she's marrying. And the story says in the Talmud that they were so poor, they had a little tent and they were sleeping in the street. They were homeless. And one night, they had a little straw on the floor just to be a little bit comfortable. And one piece of straw went into her hair and poked her. And only that was hanging in her hair. Now, we don't know what it means. In our day, we don't have straw. But in the olden days, people had straw in the hair. It was a sign of poverty. That people would walk with straw in their hair. They wouldn't have now shampoos and showers and conditioner. We have nice soft hair. Go 100 years back, everybody had very rough hair. And a person walking around with some straw, dirt in the hair, that was a sign of poverty. Now you go to the convenience store and for 3 shekels you buy a shampoo. So Rabbi Akiva became very, very upset. Seeing that his wife, that before was sleeping on a golden bed, now she's sleeping on the floor, and a little piece of straw got stuck in her hair. And he told her, I promise you, one day I'm going to be very rich, and I'm going to buy you a beautiful pin that is going to have a drawing of Yerushalayim on it, and that's going to be the pin that will hold your hair. And that night, he was so upset that he was crying the whole night for Hashem, that his wife should not suffer like that. Hashem could not take his crying. The entire heavenly army could not bear the crying of Rabbi Akiva. That Eliyahu Navi had to come down and do something. So Eliyahu Navi comes and knocks on their tent, dressed as a poor man. And he tells them, I'm sorry to bother you at a late night like that, but my wife just came back from the doctor and we just had a baby. And unfortunately, we don't even have a straw or anything to put the baby on. Maybe you have some straw to give us? Of course, Rabbi Akiva, without thinking twice, takes the straw away and gives it to the man and sends him over, which was, of course, Eliyahu Navi. And he turns around to his wife, Rachel, and he says, listen, we thought we're poor. We at least have straw. He doesn't even have straw. So the Talmud teaches that you have to always look at the good things of everything. You have to constantly look at the good and positive and bright side of everything in your life. If you think you're poor, there's somebody more poor than you. If you think you're chas v'shalom yom habayin, there's somebody in greater problems than you. There's always somebody more than you. The point is that it's a little bit off the subject, but you always have to see the good that is in your life. And if you know how to see the good in your life and thank Hashem for that, and to value it and say, yeah, I don't have much, but I have more than that person, then by default, what you talk will never be bad things about somebody, because you will learn to see the good in everybody. It's very easy to see the bad in everybody. Any person now can point the finger at every individual and point the bad thing in that person, because we all have bad in us. That person is lazy, that person lies, that person doesn't show up on time. Every person has something. It's very easy to see the bad thing in people. But to see the good in a person and to be able to value that and to talk about that, that's a very great, great level. And that's why Rabbi Akiva became very big. He became big in the Torah, that he's literally one of the pillars of our old Torah. He became extremely wealthy at some point. There's a book about Rabbi Akiva. You should read it. We have it here in English. It's all the miracles, what happened to Rabbi Akiva in his later time in his life. People would just throw money at him. He situations would come. He was extremely, extremely wealthy. People would just give him their wealth. Rabbi Akiva became so huge, such a giant, that A, he became a giant in the Torah. B, he became extremely wealthy. And most important, he died when he was 120 years old. He had a very long life and a very healthy life. And he died on the day he was born, like a tzaddik, like Moshe Rabbeinu. He actually didn't die, he was murdered. But that's a different... He's one of the Arugei Malchut. He was murdered. I shouldn't say died. But the day of his death was the day of his birth, which is the 9th of Tishrei, if you want to once commemorate it. It's the day before Yom Kippur. So all that is attributed to the fact that he was so humble, that he was able to see the good in everything, value the good in everything, was able to talk good about everybody. That's why in the plague, now we're commemorating the death of 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva. That's one of the reasons why we take on ourselves these dinim of mourning during the first period of the Omer. Because we're commemorating, there was a plague, 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva died. Amazingly, the five that did not die, you see who they are. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi. I mean, these are serious Talmidim. They continued his path. But the whole point that Rabbi Akiva gave over is the humbleness. For 40 years, Rabbi Akiva was a nothing, was a nobody. When he was 40 years old, he went to learn in yeshiva with little kids. And we see from that when you know how to humble yourself, and not only to humble yourself, to see the good in everybody, then A, by default, Hashem rises you to levels that you can't even imagine. But needless to say, since we're talking about about Lashon Hara, that will cause you not to talk Lashon Hara about people, because you're going to see the good in that person. You're not going to see the bad. If you have a question, we're almost done, and then we'll take the questions. The point I want to take from that is very, very simple, that when I'm looking at the process of becoming pure of Lashon Hara, is A, humble yourself. The pine tree, represents my ego, and the grass represents, you have to be humble. Get off your high horse. So what if somebody said something to you? So what if somebody did something to you? You're not that great yourself. Probably most likely you're getting it back because you did it to somebody else. Somebody stole from you, you probably stole from somebody, and it's just, it turned around against you. But more than that, we need to practice that our words are positive words. And when my words are constantly going to be positive, my life will be positive. If I have problems with poverty, parnasa, sickness, anything, we're all battling with problems. Nobody can come and raise their hand now and say, my life, Baruch Hashem. I mean, people do say that because they just accept the reality as it is. But the reality is that we all deal with problems. And I can guarantee to you that a big portion of our problems would be removed and annulled if my entire motion would be just bringing positivity into the world. So the positivity will come back at me. So I want to constantly see the good in everything. But comes a big question. But there's a lot of bad in my life. How can I just be constantly, Baruch Hashem, you know, some people that everything you ask them, Baruch Hashem, why are you so happy? You have $100,000 debt in your bank, Baruch Hashem, it's not $200,000. So, but the reality is that some people, all day long, they're with a smile. Now you're wondering, is it fake? Or is it some pill that they're taking that they just puts them in denial and they don't understand that their life has a problem? So the reality is, yes, the Torah tells me, be positive. But practically, how do you want me to be positive? I have problems in my life. I'm getting kicked out of my house. I just lost my job. I was diagnosed now with a problem. How are you requiring me to be positive when you're throwing me on me? You're bombarding me with problems. I mean, doesn't make sense. So we learned something very interesting, that if you notice, and it's emphasized, and we learned that from that part in the book of Vayikra, it's talking about a part where Hashem calls Moshe Rabbeinu into the tent, Vayikra Hashem el Moshe, and then it says to him, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe le'emor. And you find it a lot in the Torah. And Hashem spoke to Moshe le'emor, to say it. Right? Now, Chazal, our sages, stopped for this word. What's le'emor? Isn't it obvious? Le'emor means to say, to give it over. Isn't it obvious that Moshe Rabbeinu is getting now the law, the halacha, the mitzvah, in order to say it? Why? Why does the Torah repeat? You know how many times in the Torah it says the word le'emor? How many dozens of times? Open in the Torah, every time we say, Vedaber Hashem el Moshe le'emor, for him to give it over. So our sages have a problem with this word. Isn't it obvious that Moshe is here to teach us? That's why he's called Rabbeinu, our teacher. The reason why Hashem says le'emor, because first of all, you would find sometimes where it doesn't say le'emor. It just says, Vedaber Hashem el Moshe. Le'emor allows Moshe Rabbeinu to give it over. Which means that I learned from that if I tell you something, as long as I did not approve for you to give it over, you're not allowed to say it. If I now told you now, listen, I have a financial problem. I have chas v'shalom. I have a sickness. I have an issue. If you didn't tell me you are allowed to say it, I'm not allowed to say it. I can't come to my wife now and tell her, you know what that person just told me? People come to my wife and they talk to her and they assume that she knows what they're talking about because, but I told your husband. My wife is like, my husband doesn't tell me anything. I don't know what you talk with my husband. What you talk with my husband stays with my husband. And people don't understand. He didn't tell you what's going on? She's like, no. If somebody comes and tells you a problem, and they did not give you permission to say it, you're not allowed to say it. And if you say it, that's Lashon Hara. Doesn't matter right now if you're protecting somebody or not. It's besides the point. The Torah goes out of its way to tell me that everything that Hashem told Moshe, He says, I'm approving to you, I'm giving you approval to give it over. And you will find in the Torah times that it doesn't say Lemor. It just says, Vedaber Hashem el Moshe. And there's a story in the Tanakh with Yeshua about a certain individual that he caused a problem. He did something bad. And as a result, there was a plague and everybody started dying. And Yeshua turned around to the Kadosh Baruch Hu and told him, Hashem, why is everybody dying? And Hashem says, I can't tell you. I can't tell you why, but somebody did something. I just can't tell you. Hashem did not want to talk about Lashon Hara. And He said to Yeshua, you figure out by yourself that there's somebody that is doing something that is causing the plague to happen. And Yeshua himself was a very wise man, that he was able to give a survey, so to say, and he fished out the person that was doing something wrong, and he quietly told him, stop what you're doing. So we even see that Hashem does not want to talk about Lashon Hara. Even now, when we talked about last week about the kosher animals, the Torah is so particular, it doesn't say an impure animal. It says the animals that are kosher and the animals that are not kosher. The Torah doesn't want to say chayat me'ah, impure animal. It says an animal that is not kosher. You see, the Lubavitch Rebbe was very, very particular with that. He would never say anything wrong or bad about anybody. He wouldn't say a person that is secular. he would say a person that is not keeping Torah and mitzvahs right now. He would always shift it around that we would not say something bad about somebody. He wouldn't say that person is not eating treif. That person didn't eat something that is kosher. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe was very emphasizing that don't say it in the negative tense. Say it in the positive way. So instead of saying that, you know, you are a liar, say, I'm sorry, but you're not speaking truth. So our words are very, very powerful. Now we need to take from the teachings of the Torah that if I do not get permission to say something, I'm not allowed to say it. And this is a very important thing for you to know, because people tell you, listen, I have a problem. You told it to me, this is a vault. You cannot come and say it. And if you are saying it, even if it's for your best friend, then that's Lashon Hara. Now, where do we see our answer to our question? To sum it all up. Because our question is, what if I have to warn somebody? What if I have to protect somebody? Is this Lashon Hara? So we have the answer in the Torah. The Torah does not leave us without tools. Now where do we get our answer to this question? With a story with Rivka that overheard that Esav wants to kill Yitzchak. You remember that story? Yitzchak came to take the bracha, the blessing. He, so to say, stole it from Esav. Now Esav says, I'm going to kill my brother. Rivka overheard it and she was like, I have to warn my son, because he's going to kill him. So she goes to Yitzchak, sorry, to Yaakov, what am I saying? He's going to Yaakov and saying, she told him, you better run away. Your brother wants to kill you. This is Lashon Hara. She now said Lashon Hara about Esav, because she called him a murderer. He wants to kill you. But she warned Yaakov. But she didn't tell it to Yitzchak. When Yitzchak told her, what are you doing? She told him, no, she came up with some excuse. Because he told her, why are you sending our son away? I don't want my son away from me. She came with all sorts of excuses. And the excuses that she came, I don't want him to marry a girl that is here local. I want him to marry a girl from where I came from. So I'm sending him to my place of birth. She came with some excuse. But to Yaakov, she says, run away, he's going to kill you. She said, Lashon Hara about Esav. Now our sages say, okay, listen, Esav was a rasha, was a mean, wicked person. There's so much Lashon Hara about against him. Another case, But really, our sages come to conclusion, she said Lashon Hara about Esav. But she came to teach us when she had to protect Yaakov, then she had to say, so to say, Lashon Hara, and then it's not Lashon Hara, because she had to protect him. And that's where we get our answer for all these questions. If I have to protect somebody, if I have to warn somebody, that's not Lashon Hara. It's warning and it's saving somebody. But it has to be done in a very cautious way that it's not going to cause a problem. And I have to go back to my mother, Rivka, that taught me how to do it. She was a tzedeket, she was a righteous woman. She said only to Yaakov, run away, he's going to kill you. End of story. And don't tell it to anyone and don't share it. Even Yaakov did not come to his father and tell him why he's running away. Just because there's not going to be Lashon Hara here. There was one detail that needed to be mentioned. That's it. So when I am facing a situation that I have to save somebody, but saving, not because I have an agenda. I have to save that person or warn that person. There's no Lashon Hara there. And it has to be said one thing and that's it. I cannot come and say and add and details and he did this and he did that. Don't buy there. Why? Because they did something wrong for me. That's it. And the right way of even doing it is to making sure that I'm investigating 100 times before I'm even saying to people not to buy there or not to shop there or not to use that person or go to that individual professional. The point is that to sum it up, when I'm presented with a situation that I have to protect somebody and it's a matter of either a life of death or a severe thing, then I have to say that. And if somebody comes and tells me now, listen, we want to make a match between that boy and that girl, is that boy okay? Is the girl fine? to that particular individual, I have to say, listen, that individual is suffering from a certain disorder. You need to know it. Don't go make a whole thing out of it. But somebody that we know, the girl tried to commit suicide twice. It doesn't matter right now why, but and she's on heavy medication and there's a lot of problems. And somebody called me for a recommendation. Is it a good match? And in this case, I had to say, no, that's it. No. I don't have to start going into the which pills she's taking and what's the situation and the prescription that the doctor gave her. No, that's it. Why no? No. You asked my opinion? No. That's it. So I saved that individual and I didn't let it escalate. So that's what I want to learn from that, because I'm presenting with this situation all the time. So A, to answer my question, when I come to this situation, you cut it short. And you say, when it comes to save somebody, you have to make an analogy that you're really saving. But really, when I want to take the concept of Lashon Hara, because we always talk Lashon Hara, and I don't want to get to that point. I want to, you know, there's three sins that a person cannot be saved every day. Every day, a person will fail in those sins. And in these three, and one of them is Lashon Hara. So I want to get myself used to constantly talking positive about people. Just to conclude, is the point is that when it comes to warn somebody about something that will be chas v'shalom devastating or life-changing or huge, you have to warn and you have to use the right precautions that chas v'shalom is not going to be more damage than there already is. Every case has to be dissected and thought and talked about and looked into it before you make a decision. And again, what I'm saying is examples. It's not the right way to catch me on my words and to corner what I say. It's just examples. And for whatever reason, I told you many times, when I talk, it's not me talking. I sit here, you don't notice, but I have here a button. And I click this button and I go into auto mode and I don't talk. It's Hashem talking from my mouth. And the Ashgacha Pratit makes my words hit exactly each and every one of you what you need to hear. And if you need to be annoyed about what I said, that's a good reason. It means that it needs to be addressed. Now we're going to go to our next class with a short break. But to conclude here, we have to monitor what comes out of our mouth. We have to see positive in everything. And even if something is bad, there's also positive in it, and the positive can overcome the negative. The point I want to take from this is that two major important things. A is to monitor my words, that my words should always be positive, and to be able to put this positive energy into everything. And the second thing, that yes, when it comes to Lashon Hara, if I don't have permission to say anything, I'm not allowed to say it. That is Lashon Hara. Now, just to quickly answer what you said, if because also Rachel, wait, hold on, because also Rachel talked about it, but she left. Somebody told me not too long ago in a shiduch, when I went through the information, she told me, you can say that I have this, and this problem. She told me, you can say, then I'm allowed to say it. If somebody comes and tells me, listen, that person is a little bit, this is the problem, please don't say that. Even if that, I'm not allowed to say that. That's where the Torah comes and says, le'emor, if you don't have permission, don't say. Exactly what she, Rachel Nama, just said. I would not want somebody to say that I have a mental problem. Just say no. So again, we don't want to dissect every example. Excuse me? Again, we don't want to dissect now every example, because we're going to be sitting here till Rosh Hashanah just dissecting the examples. That's why when it comes to the actual thing, you have to consult the right people, think about it many times before you say. What I want to you want to take something out of today is A, is how to control your Lashon Hara, when not to say it, when do to say it, and how to use it. Baruch Hashem, we have enough information to start working on, that we can humble ourselves, see things positive, and Bezat Hashem, not damage our mouth and our tongue with a lot of lies and slandering in Lashon Hara. Have a beautiful, beautiful Shabbat.